Hello, family. Are you ready to make some magic? You gotta sing it with me. Oy ave. Oy ave. Oy ave leo. All right. Oy ave. Oy ave. Oy ave leo. Oy ave. Oy ave. Oy ave leo. Come on, clap. Oy ave.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm Michaela, my longtime collaborator. Thank you so much, darling. Mwah.
Yay. See you later. Mwah.
So Oya, as many of you know, she hurls her horsetail whip and summons the winds of change. Mwah. And we know that whatever we speak to in another, that's the part of that person we're inviting to dance. And one of the great things about Michaela, we've been working together since 92, is walking down the street with her in D.C., and to every kind of homeless and interesting and questionable person we saw, she would go, "Hello, King," and they would all respond, "Hello, Queen." And I go, "Ami, do you know these people?" And she's like, "No." So we love that. We love that. So that is Oya. We are introducing, again, the power of planets, the cooperators who are standing by. Oya is Uranus, the trickster. She is also the goddess of the marketplace, reminding us that the marketplace in world mythology is governed by trickster ingenuity. It's not some Voldemort. It's meant to be the caravanserai. It's meant to be the Zocalo, where, you know, there's spices coming in and the storyteller lives in the marketplace. You know, as great ally Zipporah Berman in Canada says, we just want to slow down the dementors of doom and death, slow them down while the marketplace forces of reverent ingenuity cook and come alive. So slowing things down, slowing things down. So we want to introduce, you know, the beautiful language of astrology, you know, so much dissed but so powerful. You know, astrology, the originating language, language grants us access to the realm it describes. It is this beautiful language that is about the interior of our psyches and how it connects us to the world. Each planet represents a living quality of intelligence that resides within us and connects us to the world. So as we speak of these beings, you know, our own mythological DNA goes, "Ooh, yes, 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 yes." It calls these beings forth. So we're gonna introduce all these beings, but first, of course, those who've been hanging with me for a while and those of you who are new, welcome old and new allies. We have Muti. Muti is from the Sangomas of South Africa. Muti means power and medicine. So indigenous, the indigenuity in within all of us knows that true power is that which heals. So we say with the Muti, it's coyote hair from my friend Stella Coyote. It's Syrian tobacco from the once beautiful May It Be Again and other mysterious ingredients and sacraments. And we say, O spirit of the compassionate trickster residing within each one of us, you know, awaiting the time for trickster redeemer to enter onto the world stage. Open the path before each one of us and grant us the opportunity to contribute our medicine mojo to the collective cauldron at this time of dire beauty. Wah! Okay, there we go. So, it is great in perpetual in perpetual pertinent perpetuity to convene the Council of Renaissance. We say everyone here, everyone listening, has some medicine mojo to contribute now that we want. So we're just now introducing Pluto. Pluto is muti, is power. It reminds us that we know, our ancient selves know, we don't source power, we invite it. We invite it by dedicated gatherings, we invite it in that way. The modern world's kerfuffle, huge kerfuffle, is that it has mistaken dominance and control for power. And Pluto says, dominance and control are the toxic mimic of power. Let go of control so real power can come on through. Yeah. So I love to attribute, but I don't know yet who made this wonderful quote, but some wonderful woman said, listen for your destiny, and when it calls, release your plans. So there we go. So we know in human history, you know, throughout, if we go back to the originating impulse, we want to cook everything back, ho'oponopono, cook everything back to its originating impulse, liberate it, and offer it a template for fresh expression. So humans have done this, all the standing stones, the equinoxes, the solstices, the cave paintings, but what's going on with equinox and solstice, where the sun illumines the painting or the writing at the back of the cave? It's where humans are going, come on in, O sun, and illuminate this story. This is our guiding template. Come on in and animate that. So we're picking up our skill set again, you know, inviting power in and go animate this, you know, in collaborative cahoots with nature. Because part of the dynamic, Pluto says, there is myth to this madness. Okay, we want to cook everything back, liberate it, and then offer it a fresh template. We say the divine wants to be liberated from all past confines of human imagination. Maybe so. A great book called The Death and Resurrection Show. Almost, the title is almost the whole point, in which Rogan Taylor does the whole history of theater going back as far as we can go back. It keeps getting further, you know, 30,000 years or so, and saying always it was to invite power into the world, this extraordinary thing, and it lives in our, again, in our DNA. So even in the modern world, you know, when we go to even a movie or whatever, part of us knows that something amazing is supposed to happen, but usually it doesn't. until now. And so the modern world has compensated for the lack of kind of mojo by just going, nah, nothing happened, let's just crank up the volume. So we go, high volume is a compensation for lack of sacred. We go... So navigating the noir of now, we can say that for a long time, you know, we say the death and resurrection show, we want to cultivate a kind of detective cunning. Now, I love detective novels, I love, you know, all kinds of dark things, because they go way back. If we go very far back, I was wondering, when are the first crime and detective novels? And we go back to 220 BC in China, where on still readable bamboo books, there are crime novels and detectives, going back to 220 BC. And it was always to guide human affairs to be in accord with the mandate of heaven. And that's what we're here again to play with. So Pluto says, ho'oponopono, cook everything back into the cauldron, cook it back, you know, and then ladle out liberating spirals and offer metaphoric template of the desirable story. So working themes, let's say metaphors are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world. Our language, our metaphor, our story. And part of what we want to do for our team is just kind of a language upgrade so that our language and our story matches our dedication. And Jornus the trickster says, we don't really care what you humans do at this moment. We care the manner in which you do it, that it be from freedom and choice rather than hot reaction. You know, and no choice. So we don't really necessarily want to fight for peace. We don't want to fight global warming. It's fighting is a very hot word. It releases a lot of adrenaline in our system, and it's one of the things that got us into this mess. So we're not going to fight global warming. We're going to engage the ingenuity of humans to cooperate with nature. Even though that's a little long, it's more to the gist of things. So our first, you know, so as we gather things here, again, powerful metaphors, you know, again, that invites power in to animate it. So right now it says, all of us have a quiver of arrows. and each arrow is tipped with compassion, with tyranny as its target. Futum. So everyone gets to leave with a quiver of arrows, you know, tipped with compassion, with tyranny as its target. I love redefining the word forgive. It was a conversation with a friend in which we go, we don't want to condone people, but if we redefine forgive as to mean to give energy for change, then who couldn't we forgive? You know, we could forgive almost any of the Dementors of Doom. We could forgive ourselves for small and large infractions. You know, we forgive ourselves for using this plastic nonsense. You know, we give ourselves energy to change that. So forgiving is also part of the dynamic, because we are welcoming back the trickster redeemer. In world mythology, the trickster redeemer, different from the just sort of guy, the trickster redeemer, Scheherazade, the power of the woman storyteller, she liberates not only the land and women, but is willing to liberate even the tyrant who has murdered his own heart. So we as agents, we go into the cauldron, Pluto's cauldron. How about releasing our addiction to having an enemy into the cauldron? There we go. So we have myriad gifts. All the esoteric schools say we don't need more power, you know, just to invite things in, but to animate all the gifts that we have, things like Dorothy's slippers and the Wizard of Oz that we've always had, but have forgotten. And again, it's the power of metaphor. So I always love bringing in, you know, that we all of us have a magic mirror that we're going to leave here with and practice. And we say the secular critic within us all holds up a mirror to society and go, look, it's dangerous, it sucks, in detail, okay? And then the trickster part of us, with a wave of the hand, turns the mirror into a window. But look how beautiful it could be, the magnetizing all-inclusive story, the magnetizing all-inclusive story. And then with another wave of the hand, turns it into a door. Let's go. So mirror, window, door, mirror, window, door. And just for, it's a rather long bumper sticker, but I like it. well, no, actually, more coming up. That would be a long bumper sticker, but here's another long bumper sticker. All tyranny is compensatory weeniedom. You know, I think that it's we want to, the purpose of ritual magic has always been, again, you know, dedicated people like ourselves, you know, to gather in this way, to be willing to spiral forth into the memosphere, which is the realm of influence of the compassionate trickster within all of us, into group human mind, expanded tolerance and willingness to cooperate, into group human mind, and especially we now, who have the luxury of not being in a hot, reactive circumstance, to, you know, expand a whole repertoire of responses to be available, you know, for people. There's an interesting neuroscience concept lately that lamenting can freeze action, and that scripts of deprivation, shame, abandonment, and betrayal create an actual inflammatory response in the body, like tsh. So we want to be like turmeric and ginger. We want to be anti-inflammatory agents. And so it also says then, if we want to change our own personal dynamic, and then whatever we do for ourselves grants us the spiritual muscle tone to be able to do this in the world, you know, to change our own stories, again, mirror, window, door, but also the collective stories. The stories then become a necessary strategy of what we lean into. Now, many of us may know famous chemistry teacher Walter White, who says in his teaching to his class, says, the faster the chemical interaction, the more violent the explosion. We go, yes. Articles in the New York Times, weather and violence. Throughout human history, when there's been extreme weather, violence has increased until now. The trickster part of all of us loves against all odds. This is why this part of us is entering onto the world stage now. We go, that is predictable. The trickster part of all of us loves against all odds. So the trickster goes, now is perfect. That's good. And looking at a seatmate's computer at one point, going, ooh, he was getting an edict from up high media land. And the edict coming down to all, you know, media people was, in the reporting of all stories, eliminate subtlety, increase urgency. We go, well, that's perfect, isn't it? Well, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to increase subtlety and compost urgency. We know. You know, again, in the sacred teachings of Star Trek that we will often refer to. but perhaps you remember in the ancient history of Star Trek that at one point the evil spirit that fed on fear took hold of the ship, and he was trying to scare everybody, like, oh, and everybody's scared. So Captain Kirk, of course, got everybody stoned. And so the evil spirit would be like, and the crew would just go, this guy sure is gloomy. And the being just said, boo, and dissolved back into the ethers, you know. So part of the dynamic of right now, the outer planets, Pluto, Uranus, Neptune, large by energetic symbolism, even if not by mass in Pluto's case, Pluto, Uranus, Neptune, they represent huge forces of nature's evolutionary ingenuity. And they are the keepers of the guiding metastory for, you know, human culture, but also even biological, the whole culture of which we're a part. Now, part of the dynamic in which we are, Pluto, death, rebirth, in Capricorn, structure of world, it says all dominance, all empire, all colonialism, it goes way back, row you bastards, dominate the world, now it's running on fossil fuels, and it's collapsing, So it's going down, and underneath is Uranus, the trickster, culture of reverent ingenuity, rising up. So I've said this before, but I like it too much. It's why cable news shows are brought to us by Viagra, because Empire just can't get it up anymore. There we go. So we want to be magnetizers, storytellers, going, come on over, everyone. You know, we need the awakened imagination of right-wing golfers, inner-city kids, everybody. Come on over from the thing that's going down to that which is coming up. You know, as Alan Watts says, no sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you. You know, come on over here. So we want to expand our willingness to cross borders. I live in Washington, D.C., really on your behalf. just me and the coyote, pretty much, outside of town. And so, in Washington, I cross borders. I go talk to conservatives and even Tea Party people and whatever. So we also have with us, kind of Oya's horsetail whip, which is to cross borders, be willing to talk across borders, no ghettos anywhere. And then once we cross the border, we erase the border. You know, no borders, no walls. No borders, no walls. And here's Pluto going, yes, very good, okay. So we're in this now. You know, some people say, when will this transit be over? And we go, never, because all transits, all patterns are available really forever. But the last of these seven squares will be March 17th, 2015. When it will be at 15 plus Aries. That's St. Patrick's Day. I love the story of St. Patrick, the apocryphal one, that he's invited to a wine testing initiatory dinner, and he's given a cup of poisoned wine. So he takes the cup of poisoned wine, he holds it to the light, he blows off, the poison rises to the top, he blows it off like froth, wah, and quaffs the drink, and toasts everyone, even those trying to poison him, causing the elders to go, ooh, a real initiate. So that's part of where we're going. Again, it's again the trickster redeemer blesses all, metabolizes the poison. We've all been given a cup of poisoned wine. And we could go, God damn it, another cup of poisoned wine. Or we could hold it up to the light, blow it off and go, ha ha, ha. No, we don't diminish, what we're heading into, but again, against all odds, we can do this thing. Again, it's only by collaborating with everything, the wolves and the coyotes and the bacteria and we say magic is simply a willingness to collaborate with everything. So the last Pluto square was 1933. It was when Sinclair Lewis said, when fascism comes to America, it will be draped in a flag and carrying a cross, he said in 1933, pretty prescient. But in 1933, we had the New Deal. Let's employ artists and everybody and writers and a really pretty great thing. In Europe, they had the New Order, 1933, brewing. So again, Pluto Uranus says, engage artistry to, again, lead and regenerate the culture or take your pick. So we want to speak about the value of danger. We say Pluto square Uranus says it's an epic evolutionary opportunity, necessity, responsibility to become smarter. And we go, oh, we like that. Now, our late great ally, Peter Warshall, wonderful. I was just watching one of his lectures on light, and he said, you know, fireflies, beautiful bioluminescence, and it can also mimic other insects that go, oh, how beautiful, and then it eats them. And he goes, you know, octopi in the ocean, they attract, you know, bioluminescent bacteria that is very beautiful. And again, other creatures go, how beautiful, and then the octopus eats them. So Warshall said, you know, danger and beauty, they are together in our journey. It's why when we go to art galleries, there's some sizzle missing. It's a friend of mine's Plutonian dating advice saying, you know, we would want everyone to have a relationship that's dangerous in a good way. We go, whoo. So we know to be agents of democracy and freedom and response, to tap into Uranus, trickster, nature's evolutionary ingenuity, we want an ever-expanding repertoire of responses. To react to anything, you know, is hot, inflammatory, and not free. It's to carry around a portable prison for oneself and for others. So, according again to the ancient sacred teachings of Star Trek, according to future Prime Minister of the UK, Eddie Izzard, he says, Eddie Izzard said, you know, Star Trek, a very advanced civilization, and yet their phasers only had two settings, stun or kill. We want more settings. And he started to say, you know, left kettle on at home setting, I will kill you, oh wait a minute. Or sudden interest in botany setting, I will kill, oh look at the moss. So I think while we're here and forevermore, you know, you want to adjust your phaser, right? Again, it's like a tip with compassion, you know, sudden interest in biomimicry. Look, ingenuity. So again, to fill those in, to play with that is, again, more phaser settings, more repertoire of responses. I love in Michael Gruber, who writes esoteric thrillers, novel, this crucial guiding indigenous phrase, to love disharmony back into harmony creates a greater harmony than existed before. It's part of this evolutionary dynamic. And we also know spirals in nature, when conflicting forces come together, spirals ensue. You know, so spiraling in our language, in our metaphoric agility, in our shape-shifting, in our whatever, something's coming at you, to spiral. You know, somebody likes a movie I hated. I love the movie you saw. You know, again, all kinds of playful things. So the woman trickster redeemer within all of us, regardless of our extremely temporary age, race, and gender assignment, is the magnetizing, all-inclusive, unifying story. That's what we're all working on here. Come join this. And I love a rascal friend of mine, feminist archaeologist, says, what if the idea of matriarchy is a patriarchal concept? We go, ooh, that's fun. It's spicy, you know. As opposed to, what about actual equality? Actual equality would look matriarchal, I mean, because we're so far from it. It's intriguing that at the ancient Asclepions, Chiron, a mythological figure, very prominent part of our mythological vocabulary, Chiron, wounded healer, that's the boring part, but he's the first Western mythological mentor, and the first thing he teaches his students is how to transform bows and arrows into lutes. So from 2,500 years ago, we're still trying to get that one straight, but we go, the transformation of war through art into art and beauty. And with his student, Orpheus, whom he teaches to play the lute, and Asclepius, whom he's teaching to be the Greek god of healing, they go on a journey, and they found the Asclepions, which were cultural centers that really existed throughout the ancient world. Throughout time, we have mythic figures founding real things. Magnetizing metaphor into matter has always been the thing. So at the Asclepion, these were cultural centers of intentional dream incubation, healing, and theater. And I just learned from somebody that I was a scholar of the Asclepions that the first thing people did for their healing was they had to release their slaves as a first act of healing. And we go, slavery of all kind, and that means the subjugation of nature, you know, as well, our dominance. Dominance is going into the cauldron, again, equality coming out. So let's say all natural facts are social strategy metaphors. If we want to heal water, we become more like water. If we want to heal wolves, we become more like wolves. After the ongoing cataclysm in the Gulf, you know, it began, but it's ongoing for many thousands of years, really. But there was a good TEDx with great deep ocean scientists, and the scientists were all weeping. It's like a tarot card. The scientists were weeping because they loved the ocean. But there was a great guy, Rick Gallo, and he came on the radio to say, this is terrible, but you want to know that at the very bottom of the ocean, you know, it is teeming with life, teeming with life. And he said there are these vents, you know, biogenesis, just blowing new life into the world. So we go, well, linguistic biogenesis. You know, we throw tired language into the cauldron and ladle out fresh things. To be unexpected is liberating. Again, Coyote throws lightning into the circle and breaks it into a spiral. You know, so if we have, you know, again, isms and, you know, activist, and even though I have the Visionary Activist show, and but I'm still stuck with that, but anything pretty much an ist, there's a defense against it. You know, so like when I'm at CPAC and, you know, Austrian right-wing, you know, whatever crazy economists come up and go, you, who are you? I go, I am Coyote Network News. I'm a mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. And they go, oh, that is so cool, you know. So we know the molecules, you know, molecules of reality love to dance to the vibration of our words. We're sort of on schedule. Okay, so want to bring in just predator-prey. What is unique to us as humans? We are pattern-tracking beings. We've always had astrology, Earth, on Earth as it is in heaven. And what is unique to being human? We might say one of the definitions of what it is to be human is to discern the pattern of evolutionary intelligence, the liveliest possibilities available at any moment, and offer ourselves to that. Each moment in time awaits our dedication to animate its potential. So in the predator-prey dynamic on this beautiful planet, there's a phrase, again, that Jesus says, let us be as wise as serpents and as gentle as doves. Predator-prey right there together. Excuse me. It might be that we have a unique opportunity to integrate predator-prey within us. It might be that something unique to humans is our capacity to borrow biomimicry, to borrow qualities of intelligence, you know, from our fellow flora and fauna. You know, it might be that we have an opportunity to be engaged, you know, inviters of increased symbiosis and collaboration. So I love just a little bit of Lewis Hyde saying, you know, coyote becomes more cunning by encountering cunning. It's the value of danger. You know, just as the country bumpkin may eventually become a cosmopolitan if enough confidence men appear to school him. Well, we have been very wealthy with confidence men. And as Steve Behrman says, and very often confidence men, the pros become the cons. And may they well become cons. He quotes a biologist saying, predator-prey going back 60 million years, predator-prey measuring intelligence by brain size to body ratio, you know, maybe not the only, but predator much smarter by that, you know, than prey 60 million years ago. Then we come forward 30 million years, predator still quite a bit smarter than prey, but everybody's smarter. And then we come to now, predator is still smarter, but everybody's smarter and catching up. We go, ah, and it talks about predator-prey as one of the great evolutionary engines, or the great engines of evolution on this planet. And it's just intriguing to ponder that and go, You know, predator-prey has manners. Again, Michael Grober, who has a doctorate in predator-prey relations, says there's manners everywhere except with humans. May our species have manners again. And he says, like a hawk overhead, it'll see a prairie dog, and the prairie dog, if it's close enough to its hole, will just wiggle its eyebrows going, don't even try, just don't waste your energy. And the hawk goes, thank you. Okay, there we go. So we also, you know, just to introduce, let us be artists of atmosphere and collaborative cahoots with nature to animate the culture's guiding story and spiral this into the memosphere. Part of what's happening now for all of us, we, you know, again, the antidote to shame and whatever, Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination, has moved, you know, into the realm of Pisces. All powerful myths are with us and rooting for us. And it says to all of us, imagine that the part of us that is deepest, that knows that we are all kinned, that has been, you know, hiding that deep part of us, is about to be completely welcome culturally. When culture is in big trouble, it turns to the outsider parts of ourselves, and we go, yes. There's something from the Middle East. We say, how about in this predator-prey complex dance, how about the colonizer, the oppressor, the dominator, actually seeks healing and medicine from what he's oppressing? You know, Neptune in Pisces says it's a part of all of us that is exiled, undervalued, shunted away from mainstream culture, but is where a culture's soul, its replenishing vision, lives. So it says, you know, oh humans, don't be dazzled by obvious celebrity hoo-ha. Look at what's missing in your own psyche, what's missing in the world. That's where the real action is, and that's what we invite back into the world. So we want the trickster redeemer, the Aikido of public engagement. Envisioning the desirable future, you know, forms a partnership with it, and each time we take a step towards it, it comes towards us. You know, the Thai say, you know, because we were never colonized, we never lost our animism, sense of everything being alive. The loss of animism is evidence of colonized mind. So what I like to say to our, you know, progressive team, you know, going, oh, there they go, oh, astrology, hooey, 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 and I go, that is very colonized, yeah. ha, ha, ha. But I like also from the Middle East, I mean, it's like, again, England needed the metaphysic of India. The West needs the beauty and poetry of the Middle East underneath all of that. And a wonderful ally, you know, from Syria that I have host on the radio often, you know, Deborah Philmuth, says, it's curvy, curvy. Relationships are curvy, blessings are curvy. Remember when Jesus does say, be as wise as serpents, as gentle as doves, the word he uses, Neil Douglas Klotz points out, the word for serpent, Eve, and wisdom is the same word in the Bible. And it's like, oh, those bastards. So apparently all religious war and subjugation of the earth is just a translation error. because we know straight lines impose dominance. You know, water running straight, forced into servitude, you know, carries pollution. Curvy, slowing down, curvy, you know, is crucial. So the snake, ha ha, is actually the antidote to evil. Ha, we just got the whole thing wrong. So Deborah likes to say, you know, blessing poker, or we came up with blessing poker because in the Middle East, when it's settled as most people want it to be, and what runs in bones for thousands of years is blessing. You meet somebody in the morning and you don't go straight to the thing. You go, and you, and how is this? And when you awake, may orange blossoms waft across your path. And I see your blessing and raise you one. When you awake, may orange blossoms. And then may your lover, you know, kiss you on the neck just where you like it. And then I see, and it goes on like that. I'm reminded the first time I heard Sangra Ingerman speak, who teaches shamanism, she was working with a woman who was always be plagued by every bacteria and virus coming along, and they journeyed back and they could see her as just this little shut down little girl, and they both understood it wasn't that the bacteria and the viruses were bad, they just had more enthusiasm for life than this person did. So again, it's enthusiasm poker, it's enthusiasm poker. So again, blessings and enthusiasm are the way to go. You know, I see you and raise you one. We know lichen is not a species, but a relationship between a fungus and algae. You know, it can crack rocks. Symbiosis, symbiosis. So I have learned so many great things from my ally, David Lynn Grimes. He introduced me to Br'er Rabbit. There was times when all the creatures used to gather to sagashuate, just like there ain't been no hard times, like there ain't been no falling out, like they remembered they were all kin. He introduced me, he's a great wilderness guide in human culture, but also in Alaska on the rivers. In the most turbulent of rivers, there's always a silver tongue of calm, and you want to find that. So he also sings back the wolves. So welcome David Lynn Grimes, that we remember we are future ancestors. Yay.
Hello, dears. I'm wading in the dappled stream. My feet are cold, my hands are clean. There's water dribbling on my chin, as sweet as water's ever been. We'll all be gone tomorrow. Children, take me by the hand. Your laughter is much sweeter than the things which I don't understand. We'll all be gone tomorrow. Friends may come and friends may go. Have you seen their ashes blow out to where the garden grows? We'll all be gone tomorrow. The river runs down to the sea. It runs for you, it runs for me. Oh, bust your dams and let her free. We'll all be gone tomorrow. And if this it were my final hour, your lips I'd place upon my brow. Like bees asleep upon the flower, we'll all be gone tomorrow. So raise the glass, my darling dears, for this one night we'll have no fears. Outside the coast is looking clear, the sea is like a silver mirror. Heaven must be very near, we'll all be gone tomorrow. Children, take us by the hands. Your love is so much deeper than the things which we don't understand. We'll all be gone tomorrow.
So, like cave paintings, we're all hands now waving to the desirable future. So we want to slow it all down to welcome my great colleague, Rick Tarnas. I first met Rick Tarnas in 1990 at Cycles and Symbols Conference. He spoke right before me, and when I came on after him, I go, if I were a boy, I'd be Rick Tarnas. And it turns out, in some quirky way, it's kind of true. His moon is opposite my sun, and my moon is opposite his sun. But, you know, we often find our colleagues, you know, so meeting Rick, we are different, of course, but from the same related mystery school, like Marsilio Ficino. I think he is a dedicated romantic intellectual, and we need those things. He is a colleague of restoring mythological literacy and the choreography of the resonant field. We remember that symbolic, ball means to throw, sim means together. We have a symbolic world or a diabolic world. So symbolism restores things. So we go, welcome Rick Tarnas.
You were great 23 years ago, and you're ever greater. It's really fantastic. So all of us here who are astrologically knowledgeable, who've been initiated into the astrological mystery, we live with a certain sense of poignant paradox. Because on the one hand, we recognize that astrology provides this perspective, allows us a kind of unequaled source of a particular kind of insight, a dimension of insight and illumination for virtually every aspect of human experience, biography and psychology and cultural and political history, current events. Yet we live in an age when astrology represents the most lowly and regrettable of superstitions. I mean, it's literally it is the gold standard of superstition in our time. I mean, it's what you point to if you want to stress the ludicrousness of a particular belief or practice. It's over our civilization's allowable boundary line of plausible discourse. But perhaps from a pretty transcendent perspective, this is right, and as it should be. Perhaps when we think about it, hasn't it always been that way with the greatest spiritual treasures? They're veiled, they're hidden, they're so encompassing and yet so invisible, as encompassing as the starry night sky, yet as invisible as that starry night sky can be from the brightly lit city. It's the stone the builders rejected, and it's the philosopher's stone. One other positive thing about astrology's status in the mainstream perspective, this is a kind of positive psychological side effect that for astrologers, and that is it keeps us humble, because there's probably a tendency towards inflation that one could easily have if you're kind of permitted access into the interior of the cosmos to see the deeper mysteries in certain ways unfolding. So this is a kind of almost perhaps compensatory response. But in our moment in history, we need every possible means, every possible clue for navigating our way through the immense challenges of our time. We're like sailors setting out into strong weather, into stormy seas. And so here on this festive Saturday evening ritual, which Caroline has kindly asked me to join her annual ritual tonight, perhaps here we can speak openly of these mysteries. Maybe I'll just say one other word by way of thinking about this mystery, and that is, how can it possibly work, this vast orchestration of the cosmic movements and human experience, this constant, meaningful coincidence between above and below? It's certainly not the linear cause and effect of Newtonian billiard balls hitting each other, of something acting like gravity or some kind of physical mechanism, electromagnetic radiation or something like that. It's something much, much deeper, much subtler than that. It seems to represent a kind of synchronistic coherence that's intrinsic to life and that goes all the way down, a kind of a subtle order and an aesthetic intelligence that pervades the cosmos and naturally informs human existence. And it's like this kind of ever unfolding work of art. I love that passage from Plotinus, the great founder of Neoplatonism and one of the greatest philosophers of antiquity, when he said, "The stars are like letters which inscribe themselves at every moment in the sky. Everything in the world is full of signs. All events are coordinated. All things depend on each other. As has been said, everything breathes together." I love that. That's a deep understanding of life, but also of the mystery of astrology and this kind of coherence of macrocosm and microcosm. Everything breathes together. Here in Bioneers, we probably could understand that metaphor perhaps better than anywhere. So the dominant archetypal complex of our time is certainly the big alignment happening between Uranus and Pluto in relationship to the Earth, as Caroline pointed out to us tonight. These two outer planets, they were in conjunction throughout the 1960s into the early 70s, and they've come again into major alignment, this time the square, from about 2007 all the way to 2020, but exact right now, and moving to exactitude over and over again between 2012 and 2015, but then staying within orb, as we call it, all the way through the rest of the decade. And this is a very dynamic alignment that tends to constellate the same kinds of energies we saw in the 1960s, but in a new stage of their evolution, and with a need to develop further and resolve what was left, in some sense, more raw and unresolved the last time. Uranus and Pluto are astronomical bodies, and yet they are also their signifiers of great cosmic principles, of archetypal forces. We can think of them as like Platonic ideas that inform the cosmos, as Jungian archetypes that inform the human psyche, or as gods that were accessible to the ancient vision. Uranus represents that impulse towards sudden awakening, towards change, towards that restless desire for new horizons, for opening up from the closed. It's that impulse towards freedom, liberation, towards, it's got that quality of the unexpected, the trickster, the sudden lightning strike. Voila.
It's coyote calling. It's coyote calling. That's good.
We worked hard on that timing. All
perfect.
That's good great. Job. It is, I mean, it actually rules technology. I mean, it's like, it's the awakener, it's disruptive and rebellious, but it also brings sudden illumination and delight and new creative freedom. It's difficult to constrain, though it can wreak havoc. It suddenly liberates. Whenever it comes into alignment with another planet, it tends to suddenly activate, liberate, awaken that other planetary archetype, whatever it touches, and with unpredictable consequences. Now, coming from the other side, Pluto, this Plutonic, Dionysian, Kali principle, it comes from the depths, it's like of the cosmos, the depths of our psyches. It's that deep volcanic, it's the deep volcanic and instinctual powers of life and death. It's that power that impels evolution, prey and predator. It's the id in Freud's terms, the broiling cauldron of the instincts, as he called them, libido and destrudo, but more. It's the Kundalini serpent, ever transforming, creating, and destroying, and regenerating. Whatever it touches, it compels and intensifies with tremendous force, overwhelming intensities. And you put these two archetypes together, as happens with these big alignments, as we're in now, and you see over and over again in history, the great social and cultural, the periods of great social and cultural ferment, of revolutions, of rapid transformations, creative rebellions, as we saw in the 1960s and in every other era of the big Uranus-Pluto alignments, the French Revolutionary decade, 1789 through the 1790s, the 1845 to 56 period when women's suffrage, Seneca Falls Convention, abolitionist movement at its height, revolutions toppling, went through every capital in Europe virtually in 1848, early 1849. And before that, in other epochs like the great period of the British revolutions in the mid-17th century, or a century before that, with the Radical Reformation. Now, what seems to be happening in each case is that Pluto drives and empowers the Uranian, Promethean, Coyote impulse for creative liberation and freedom and radical change. Over and over again, we see a new stage in each of these epochs in the empowerment of women, the empowerment of youth. Just think how politically active youth became in 2008, in the first election that had happened since the late 60s, early 70s, the last time that Uranus and Pluto were in major alignment. The empowerment of the counterculture, each time of gays and lesbians, of colonized and minority cultures, and also of the Earth itself, another colonized dimension of our part of our community of life. Each time the ecology movement has been strongly activated, going back to Thoreau, mid-19th century conjunction, to Rachel Carson and the first Earth Day and radical ecology, deep ecology, and what we see around us today. And of course, it's the Arab Spring, it's the Occupy movements, it's the rapid technological innovation, the intellectual creativity of constantly going outside the box, new paradigms. All that's that's what happens each time these two planets come into alignment, but with ever fresh expression, new inflections that reflect everything that has happened up until this point. Time and history and the pace of change all seem to accelerate, and it's all we can do to keep up. It's like a fresh infusion of emancipatory energy and accelerated change. But it goes the other way too. Uranus also awakens Pluto, like lightning setting off a massive volcanic eruption from the depths in the collective psyche, the anima mundi, in the Earth itself, the will to power, the underworld revealed, the elemental energies unleashed, extreme climate, wild nature and human nature breathing together. Dionysus Kali awakened. We all have that feeling, I think, of living in a time of such rapid speeding up of history, of our own lives, with a relentless demand to keep up with the changes and a continual need to move past our comfort zones and the status quo boundaries. All these and many other phenomena of our time, like the awakening of the Dionysian energies in the sexual revolution of the 60s.
Can I chime in just for a smidge? Yeah. I like at the 60s to now. And so I like also, you know, because it's kind of like the first quarter moon. It's they were together in the 60s, now they're squared. Can we integrate them? So I like, you know, in the 60s we had the power fist, you know, like, and demand, we demand this, which is a little bit kind of unworked out issues with daddy, but I like the power fist into the palm of blessing, as part of the evolutionary dynamic. And the qualities we want to cultivate, you know, I mean, I like Uranus's image. It's H with a circle drop below it, so it looks like an archaic jail key. You know, unlock these things, and so each one of us also, you know, what are the qualities we want to have to best navigate now? Yeah, we love the great Hafez quote, in which he says, "The small man builds prisons for everyone he meets, but the wise woman ducks under the moon and tosses keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners." So we want keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners. So what are the qualities now that we most want as we are?
That symbol of Uranus is also like that circle that comes out through the, it's called the birth canal and the baby coming out. It's got a similar outcome. Well, what I was going to say is that I won't say more about all these phenomena of our time that seem to make sense when seen through the light of the this particular convergence of the gods. Clearly it's a time of collapsing and dying, and something struggling to be born. It's a time of great uncertainty. And if we are in a time of human initiation into a new mode of co-creative participation with the ensouled cosmos, then uncertainty is crucial for any initiation to occur. You really have to feel the risk. You have to feel the unknown. And nothing reconfigures moral values like an encounter with mortality. And you can't have a pretend near-death experience. You really have to think, you really have to feel it's on the line, as we do. We all, what great responsibilities we all carry here in this moment. I love Václav Havel's statement about, he once said, morality means taking responsibility, not only for your own life, but for the life of the world. And we also all carry a certain grace as we enter the great struggles of our time. The grace of our own spiritual experiences, the support of our various beloved communities, of communities like Bioneers itself, the nourishment, the grace that comes from nature's wildness and the earth's beauty. And not least, and this is the last thing I want to share with you before we have our little further conversation for a moment, not least, I think we all carry the grace that comes from being aware of the evidence of this beautiful synchronistic coherence between the macrocosmic movements and our human lives, because being aware of that can bring a certain trust, a new sense of trust in the universe. For in some mysterious way, the universe seems to care about this earth, this moving center of cosmic meaning. It's a kind of act of love, in a sense, that the cosmos reveals these artistic, orchestrated harmonies to us. And in that sense, it's focused not only on the earth, but on each of us as individuals. So with this trust in the larger whole and of this faith, I think we each as individuals and as heroic communities such as Bioneers, perhaps we can serve as a kind of centering, healing, active presence in a world that is really desperate for orientation and larger meanings. So that's what I came to say.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you. I've always loved it when you said that, you know, imagine that this exquisite language has become the gold standard of, you know, contempt, because it is exquisite and complex and incredibly beautiful and all-inclusive. So we are here to, yes, magnetize. It's a guiding meta-story, really. That's what we've always shared, that it is this guiding meta-story. So let us welcome back just everybody on stage. Welcome back David Lynn Grimes and Amakayla. So part of our dynamic, you know, if the planets represent parts of our psyche that connect us to the world, we want to insource whatever we've been outsourcing. So we are humble. We apologize to all of creation and all the animals that we have outsourced our Saturn, our leadership to sociopathic dingbat dementors of doom, who have lost all sense of kinship. So we're going to throw into the cauldron. And people can chime in as they want, and Captain Trickster Grimes and revered spirit brother Rick Tarnas, and anything you want to sort of shout out as we go along. But first, I think our first kind of cauldron act of mojo is we're throwing into the cauldron, you know, wherever we outsourced our Saturn, just for a little. Oh, Sage of Hex. And now we want to ladle out like Trickster, you know, Obatala, and we also welcome our new model of leadership, which is welcome Uncle Trickster.
Obatala.
There we go. Excellent. And now let us throw into the cauldron, you know, the toxic mimic of Mars, which is Hyper Yang Death Frenzy. And anything else? And anything else? Because I know you, the toxic mimic of Hero. Anything? Anything
that's
you want to throw
one.
In?
That's a good one.
Okay, toxic mimic of Hero. Right. Okay. Remember the gods when Hercules was abusing power. Anybody abusing power, the gods sentenced him to go to the underworld to learn knitting and weaving. So I think that's a good one too. All toxic mimic of Mars. You know, into the underworld to learn knitting and weaving. And we're gonna ladle out Chungo.
Chungo.
Excellent. All right. Now, as we head towards our finale, in a rapid, people dedicate their whole lives to this. We're just going to give you about 10 seconds to conjure your customized, compassionate trickster. You know, again, made of, you know, coyote and duck feathers and whatever. And we're all, again, all of us riding on Raven. You know, we want our cloak and we're riding on Raven, as the Tsimshian said. We're riding on the back of trickiness itself, I think is a good Uranus kind of model. So we want a culture of reciprocal blessing. May it go well for you. It can be fierce blessing. You know, may anything up to no good be revealed, rendered harmless, and become an occasion for mirth. For everything real, there's a mythological, more effective version. There's WikiLeaks. We have WiccanLeaks, right? We have Coyote Network News, and we also have Owl Jazeera. All right. So, you know, in Arabic, there's this wonderful word, you know, people think Majnun just means crazy, but I was taught by a Bedouin in the desert that Majnun means crazy for the divine, and Mazbut means of course. So I think we want a quality of Majnun. Can you say Majnun?
Majnun.
And Mazbut means, of course, Mazbut?
Mazbut.
Majnun Mazbut.
Majnun.
Excellent. Let's go for that. Okay. And may we all be blessed, rocked in the embrace of the beauty of it all, riding on Raven. That's excellent. So are we dedicated to being public dreamers?
Yes!
Okay, so let us say together the opening words of Homer's Odyssey, returning from war and sailing to home. And he said, "Speak to me, O Muse, and through me tell the story. Speak to me, O Muse, and through me tell the story."
Oye kaka chango predula oye kaka. Oye kaka chango predula oye kaka. Chango predu samayo ma 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 samayo.
You don't have to get up, only if you want your life to work.
Go forth and be woofy.